Good morning. It is pretty much the morning. It is March the 12th, 2019, and this is Dan. And I watched that documentary on Netflix called Fire, and that's spelled Foxtrot Yankee Romeo Echo FYRE. And it's about this weird festival that was developed by a startup that wanted to improve the booking business. Basically, a man by the name of Billy McFarland and a hip hop artist by the name of Ja Rule wanted to basically Uberfy or re-engineer the way that celebrity talent is booked. So it's an interesting story. I'm not really into that. Like, I'm not one of those people that knows which star is doing what, and which hip hop artists or rock stars or singers are popular. I don't really keep up with that. That's probably a defect. I just don't give a shit. I think the whole thing's kind of ridiculous, to be honest with you. But yeah, so I'm watching this documentary called Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And so yeah, these guys want to reinvent the booking business, and they decide that one of them mentions, or one of their engineers, or one of their IT guys mentions in a meeting that they should do a music festival. And so the Billy McFarland guy and Ja Rule decide that while they're on vacation, to land on Pablo Escobar's island. And with a bunch of models or something to bring them down there to hang out for the weekend and take lots of pictures. And so they get buzz about Fyre, the festival of hanging out at Pablo Escobar's island with models, drinking and yeah. You know, if I could hang out at Pablo Escobar's island with a bunch of beautiful models and drink beer and champagne and whatnot, I mean, that'd be pretty amazing. And so, in the documentary, they basically reach the point where they say, we're going to have a 10,000 person music festival here on this island. I don't know, I guess that's the Caribbean, but on this island, on this tiny island, we're going to have 10,000 people and a music festival. And we're going to do it in a couple months. So, the whole thing is kind of like, if just as background, I was an officer in the military a long time ago. I did not stay in long. I was never in combat. My highest rank technically is captain, but I was basically just a lieutenant. So, you know, it's not like I was a general or a colonel. It's not like I was in it for a long time. So whatever you're going to take from this, you got to take with that, you know, proverbial grain of fucking salt. But I was involved in some training exercises, and I actually was involved at least in the planning of the movement of a fair part of a brigade to Korea for a training exercise and back again, which, you know, maybe that sounds boring, maybe that sounds silly, but basically you're talking about several hundred, you know, personnel, men and women, lots of heavy vehicles because it's a heavy brigade, so lots of Bradleys, lots of tanks, lots of Humvees, lots of equipment that has to be, you know, made ready and shrink wrapped. And then when you get to the destination, you've got to take the vehicles off the ships. I mean, the point is, there's a lot of logistics involved in moving several hundred people and their military equipment. And the thing about planning that is, I was just a junior officer, and I had one tiny little piece of the plan, and it wasn't that hard. But the truth is, even with all that, there's always problems. And we plan for that, you know, 9, 10 months in advance. Or at least something. I mean, maybe it was more like, yeah, basically, I arrived at that organization while they were planning it. So, yeah, the Fyre Festival thing of having 10,000 people hanging out on a tiny Pablo Escobar island it seems implausible to me on the surface if someone were saying this is what we're going to do. But on the other hand, and this is where I have to be honest, it's easy to get suckered into bullshit. I mean, we don't all want to admit this, but maybe not everyone, but a lot of us do get suckered into bullshit at some point in our lives. I have my own story. I call it the Goat King. It's from 2016 and it's depressing. And it's really one of the many reasons why I think I just almost completely and maybe will still just drop off the radar of existence because it was that kind of experience. But yeah, people will be exposed to ideas sometimes and allow themselves to believe what should be under normal circumstances unbelievable. And it's hard to know what the cause of that is. I can tell you what caused it in my case, and perhaps it's related to what causes it in almost every case. I was in my mid-40s. I felt like my life was going nowhere. I had a job that was okay, but it was like it was never going to amount to much. And so I got exposed to someone who kind of understood how to manipulate people. And the conversation went along, and all of a sudden, I'm believing I'm going to be the CTO of a company. It's easy to get suckered into that kind of bullshit, and I can tell you why I did. I wanted to believe I could have, I don't know, let's call it the American dream. I wanted to believe that I could reach a level where I could be debt-free and have a house someplace and be really, really happy, you know, with a beautiful wife. I was recently divorced, so it was like, holy shit, wouldn't it be great if I could just put my life back together again, but in some way really fucking amazing. And of course it's delusional, and of course it's insane. But if you don't have kids and you don't have a wife and you're looking at yourself in the mirror in your mid-40s, especially these days, if you're a man and you happen to have my skin complexion, which again, I'll just say it is what it is. I think people want to believe that the white man is the great sin of history. If that's true, fine, whatever, fuck it. But what I wanted to believe is I could still have a chance, that there was still something I could pull off. That it wouldn't just be some pathetic descent into hell. Although deep down inside, I know for everyone, or I should say most of the people on planet Earth, that's the future. A horrid descent into hell. And I know that sounds harsh, I'm sorry, but barring some miracle of technology, which I do not see, the numbers do not add up. And by all means, do your own research. And if you want to believe in things like magical abiotic oil or fusion reactors or something truly spectacular with battery technology, which all of which could occur, you know, the fusion reactor thing, it could happen. There are people who think it's impossible. There are others who think it's could be done. But the point is that until it does happen, it's fucking irrelevant. I was in my mid-40s and I wanted to believe in a fantasy and that the fantasy could be made real just through belief. And here's the thing, I believe in God. So, you know, I do not believe that's a delusional belief, but I do believe in God. But I can tell the difference between my belief in God and this really desire for this fantasy to come true. So when I'm watching this documentary, I'm kind of saying to myself, yeah, you can make fun of the people, you can make fun of, you know, Billy McFarland and Ja Rule and say they're crooks and say everybody was basically stupid or a criminal and that's just the story. But really, that's not the whole story when you think about it. Because this whole party festival thing is about escaping from reality. And for a lot of people now, and here's the thing that people don't get, like, and I never was able to explain it to friends and family when my life was quote unquote, you know, going so well. why it was I had a hard time with it at times. And frankly, in the last few years, I've had a hard time with it. Because in general, I've lived in places where the misery is not that far away. And I'm not one of those people that walks around staring at their smartphone. So if I'm on the street, I see homeless people. I don't have the earbuds in. I'm not just focused on my smartphone. I'm actually looking the fuck around. You know, it's, I don't know. And I know that you say, well, Dan, I have to listen to music and watch the smartphone. Otherwise, I'll go crazy, Dan. I know there are people out there like that. They need it. It is a drug to be connected. It is a drug to always be connected. And I don't know that I'm special. I mean, look at me. I upload these stupid audio files. Other people listen to them. What kind of a stupid ego trip is that? Why do I do that? There's an allegory, I believe, in Plato's Republic called Ship of Fools. And part of the premise of Ship of Fools, or part of the sort of the aspect of it, and you have to see it in the wider focus of the Republic, because the Republic, in many ways, is an argument directed at totalitarianism of a special class, like essentially a special group, a special select, you know, smart, wise group of people, just people, good people, will rule over everybody. And I don't want to go into Plato's Republic and how, you know, you select, you know, the children to be trained and blah, blah, blah. The point is, it really is a long argument for the control of the world by an elite. An elite that deserves to rule because they're so fucking elite. Anyways, one part of Plato's Republic, and it could be seen as one of the arguments for it in terms of a description, is of the ship, where basically the captain is really not that competent and the crew is mostly crazy and stupid. And essentially, and I'm summarizing here, but the outcomes are that if anyone on the ship actually knew what they were doing, like they actually understood how to navigate the ship, from the perspective of everyone else, that person would seem crazy. That person's talking to themselves. That's nuts. Go talk to yourself in the corner. So if you're out there and you look at something like pop culture and you say to yourself, this is insane. I mean, there are real problems we should be solving. There are real things we should worry about. Like, you know, bottom line, the United States has hundreds of military bases worldwide. We are in a kind of constant conflict of some kind since 2001. We are really fomenting violence and spreading violence. These are things to worry about. You know, the quality of your air, your water, your soil, these are things to be concerned about. But what the hell some celebrity is doing, that's not necessarily something we should be concerned about. But in a lot of ways, it's kind of pointless for me to talk about it because I'm an anarchist. So it's like, for me, at this point in human history, and I should say American history, what I expect is to watch things fall apart. And the only question is, how bad will it be and where will I be? I mean, right now, there's a good chance I could just end up in the streets, and that's fine, and that's what happens. I mean, that's one of the potential near-term consequences of the economic reality we find ourselves in. And also, it's not a woe-is-me thing. I mean, people end up in the streets. Not everybody in the streets is there because they're a meth addict. You know, I hate to break it to you, but... And I've said this in other podcasts, and I'll say it again. There are crazy, lazy, drug-addicted fools in every software shop, Google, Microsoft, you name it. All over Seattle, you'll find all those negative things you hate about homeless people. You'll find them in the software shop. You'll find them at the corporate headquarters. You'll find them going to work with their little magnetic keys and scanning themselves in every day of the week. So if you're going to come back and say, well, homeless people are lazy and crazy and they're drug addicted and they're killers and they're thieves, well, shit, dude, you just named all of fucking Wall Street. You just described our entire financial hierarchy, the elite that run the fucking financial world. You just basically, you know, you gave them a good night out. No, I don't pretend that homeless people are the sainted masses of only pure and good folk. That's not reality. Reality is there are a lot of homeless families out there that really do just need to get off the streets. The reality is there are a lot of homes in the shadow inventory of banks, okay, being held by banks that we bailed out in 2008 and 2009. So for me, the math is pretty fucking simple. In a moral and decent society, if we actually were that, and we're definitely not that, these banks would at least get all the fucking families off the streets. That's a good step A. I mean, if you think in terms of triage, that's a good, you know, first step. Get the fucking families off the streets. All this bullshit about saying, well, if the parents are terrible, the kids must be terrible, ergo, throw them all in the wood chipper. That's satanic bullshit. That's not conservative. That's the devil talking. Anyways, I know that's a bit of a rant there, going off topic, but yeah. So yeah, when it comes to this issue of judging the foolishness of a generation of people that want to escape, listen, there's a lot of horrid shit that people want to escape from. And I went into my own little fantasy spiral not so many years ago with the hope that I could escape my bullshit. And of course, that was ridiculous. And of course, it ended disastrously. Did it cost millions and millions of dollars or whatever the number was with this fire festival in just total fraud or whatever? Was it that bad? No. But in my own personal case, it took me from being essentially financially in a really good spot with a really high credit rating, although at this point I think the credit rating is bullshit too. It's a mark of the devil. But yeah, it took me from being in a great position financially to being essentially, yeah, in a terrible situation, which just kept getting worse. Because psychologically, when I got back from that little adventure, yeah. So when we look at something like the Fire Festival, it's kind of funny because it has a lot of meanings. Part of it is about people's desire to escape. Part of it is because people want to believe, they have to believe, especially the people at the top, that if you're poor, if you're broke, if your job sucks, it's because you're a loser. And here's the deal, folks. I'm not a communist. I don't think everyone gets an A, okay? I also don't think you reward failure. That's stupid. And the problem with 2008 and 2009 and every year since is we rewarded one of the biggest failures in human history, the failure of the banking system, with money. We rewarded the architects of that bullshit. So yeah, I gotta say that I am no communist. I also think that, you know, we shouldn't reward failure. That's a good thing not to do also. But yeah, we should give a shit about our neighbors, I think. Anyways, it is one of those cases of where people do not want, they don't want to know the reality that most people in this country are actually doing pretty bad. Like in terms of basic statistics, the pie chart, that it's more likely than not that if you took a random group of, let's say 10 people, 10 Americans randomly from across the country, let's say 10 adults, and you wanted to say how many of those adults feel financially secure and safe and all their debts paid off and they actually have some sort of, you know, wealth, I'd be surprised if the number was 2 out of 10. my best guess would be between 7 and 8 would be in some sort of a tricky situation financially, and it just gets worse from there. And I would say the 7 of the 8 probably do live almost paycheck to paycheck. Who wants to know this if they're doing well? If they're the 2 and worse, if the curve is so non-linear that if you're the 2, you're basically an entirely different level that is way beyond the level of normal people. So the Fyre Festival thing is about not just escaping into a fantasy, but also ignoring a reality, which I know you say, well, isn't that the same thing, Dan? It really, really isn't. People will escape into fantasies during good times. But during bad times, you have to escape into fantasy. But the only way that really works, if you can pretend that reality doesn't exist. And so it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, this island in the middle of nowhere in the Caribbean actually makes a lot of sense. It actually does. And here's the other thing about the Ship of Fools. About how the ship is a bunch of crazy people, and this emergent figure comes aboard, whatever, and if that person actually knew what they were doing, they'd be destroyed. There's a movie from 1965, Stanley Kramer, I think, called Ship of Fools. And Ship of Fools is another kind of allegory of this kind of idea of a bunch of just, you know, individual people with their own nutty problems heading towards a destination of, you know, basically Nazi Germany. And then basically just, you know, kind of clueless about the situation they found themselves in. I mean, which is very much the human project. I mean, beyond whatever period of history you live in, people are often part of a, I don't know how to put this. It's not always a tragedy. I guess sometimes it's a comedy. But yeah, this Fyre Festival thing is a comedy and a tragedy. It's both. And the comedy can be found in the fact that, yeah, it's funny when a lot of rich, cool people get fooled. It is kind of funny, especially if you're a rube, if you're someone like me, if you're out there in the world barely getting by financially, it is funny to sort of mock people who have money. I'm not going to lie to you, you know? And you can say, well, is that envy? I don't know if it's envy. I mean, if I had money, I would want to do better than I'm doing now. But would I ever dream of needing or desiring to be involved in music festivals on islands in the Caribbean? At this point in my life, knowing what I do about the world, no. I mean, I'd rather get a cabin someplace with some property. You know, preferably access to clean water, good soil. Learn how to farm. That's the truth. If I could do anything at this point in my life with what life I have left, basically learn to farm. And at a small scale. And maybe even figure out a way to do it efficiently. It sounds crazy, but why not? You know, rethink it. But the problem I'm having, or in general I do have, and this is the case, is that you do need a lot of money just to get there. But it's a lot more than I have. But the whole thing about the lifestyle of people who could go on a trip, because that's the thing about this documentary. A big part of it is about this magical weekend, this photo shoot of hanging out with models, beautiful women, you know, lots of alcohol, lots of beautiful scenery, lots of, you know, swimming around beautiful water. I mean, it's idyllic. It's kind of just amazing. It's like, you think, there you go. That's what you want to go do. In this hellish reality you find yourself caught in, that's what you want to go do. You want to go hang out with beautiful people and live a little bit of the beautiful life. So that's part of it. The other part of this Fyre Festival allegory is almost pretty much about society itself, especially at this point. We do have, I think, at this point in human history, this desire to believe, because we are compelled, it's a compulsion to believe that anything's possible. And God forbid you question that. It's sort of like the people that question the true story about Apollo and the trip to the moon. Listen, I don't know what happened in Apollo, personally. I have no idea what happened. But it is strange that no humans left low Earth orbit since 1972. That's just a weird thing. It is weird we forgot how we went. That we're basically reinventing technology to do something we supposedly did about, you know, almost 50 fucking years ago. So yeah, I gotta admit, I gotta be just clear on this point, okay? A lot of the shit around going to the moon, it stinks. But I don't know what the truth is. And if most people want to believe we went to the moon, why the fuck not, right? But there is this kind of compulsion. And I do think it's a feature, and people think, well, it's about the can-do spirit. And it's like, well, okay. There is that argument. You know, there's this American can-do spirit. We can do anything. Anything we want to do, and we can do it better. But this Fyre Festival thing is about that kind of hubris. Like, we can do it. Like, yeah, we landed on this island in the Caribbean. And then it's like we think to ourselves, let's do a festival, and then we do a photo shoot. And yeah, that weekend does look lovely. Could you reproduce it 10,000 times? That's a good question. Because that's what they were selling. It was like they were selling everyone gets to pretend to be them, like that weekend, where they've got nothing but models and alcohol and basically nobody else, which means privacy. And you're going to put 10,000 people on that island and get the same thing. Now, of course, if you've seen the documentary, Fyre, the Greatest Party That Never Happened, it gets worse from there. A lot of logistical problems develop. They end up moving the whole festival to a completely different spot. So this whole tiny island thing kind of just was a non-starter. It just wasn't going to happen. What's funny is that if they just said, we're going to do something for 500 people. Like, that's the thing. I looked at the island. I thought about it. Like, could you do that for 500 people? Could you pull it off? Absolutely. And that could probably be pretty cool. But no more than 500 people. And that includes staff. So it's like you look at that island. It's like, holy shit, what are you promising people? But that is the age. That is the time we live in. The shale oil miracle. I'm going to tell you something, folks. I do not work in the shale oil industry. So if you do and you want to leave me a nasty message about how I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, that's fine. But whether it's Art Berman or any of the other folks that comment on this topic, who I tend to think are telling the truth, you know, Art Berman is one. He works in the industry. Another is the blogger and writer I often read. I pretty much read every week. And that's James Howard Kunstler. And they talk about the shale oil miracle. Chris Martinson talks about it. It's really not much of a miracle. It is the end of the oil game. It is a lot like the tar sands, the boiling tar sands. It is the bottom of the barrel, okay? Everybody who has known about the history of oil in terms of oil production knew that this was going to happen. The oil you'd be left with would be, quote-unquote, you know, non-conventional. That is the fancy euphemism, non-conventional oil. But a better term for it would be expensive oil. It is where you basically get, you know, two barrels maybe, or one and a half barrels, but two barrels if you're lucky, for every one barrel of real cost. And in the case of the shale oil miracle, it is a massive, massive pile of debt. In real terms, it's not paying off. The reason why people put money into it, and this is the thing, is because it is a bet against the future in a sense, okay? It is the expectation that oil prices must go up. At some point, they will. I think it's a questionable topic. It is possible that we're at the top of the peak. And if we're at the top of the peak, oil prices really can't go up because everything's going down. That's the nature of collapse. You know, there won't be time for oil prices to go up again. No one's going to pay those prices because the entire economy will grind to a halt. So the fire festival and all of its logistical issues is kind of funny. It's one of those little subplots. You know, we can do anything. You got to have the can-do spirit. There are no limits. Anything and everything is possible. If you want to put on a massive music festival on a tiny island in the Caribbean and with only a few months' notice, it's totally possible. If we want to put people on Mars, listen, if we want people and families and pets and cats and parrots and all sorts of things living on Mars by the 2040s, totally, totally, totally possible. Of course, it might not be. That's the other thing. But that does not work with people. And I don't care how old they are. You know, you can look at this fire festival thing and you can say, well, this is a bunch of young people and young people are stupid. And that's a really, you know, that actually is kind of a stupid thing to say. But what it looks like to me is a beautiful dream. It's a beautiful dream. Listen, the American dream, for those who have been lucky enough to have it work out for them, and in the last decade, with all of the corruption and crony bullshit, I think a lot of people do end up mortgaging their souls, but the American dream can be amazing if you get to participate in it. For a lot of people these days, it's survival, you know? And so looking at it, you say, holy crap, it's obvious why people got into this weird, kind of strange mass hysteria of the fire festival. It's obvious why quote-unquote influencers on social media got suckered in. Because you've got beautiful women, and you've got elegant situations, and you've got all kinds of hijinks and fun, and you've got lobster, and you got pigs swimming in the water, and oh, by, you know, a whole bunch of millennials are into that whole pig bullshit. You've got beautiful scenery and a beautiful island, and you've got mystery, Pablo Escobar. Holy fuck. You have all of these ingredients for a beautiful dream. And that's the thing. I get it. You know, when it's like the Make America Great Again. Listen, back in 2016, I knew that they would do four, depending upon your perspective, the Republicans what they did in 2008, and that is give them the kind of anti-hero, the guy who would come along and clean everything up. Of course Obama was bullshit. Of course he helped, he basically rewarded all the banks for all their fucking mistakes. That's what he did. Of course, the wars continued in a slightly different way, but they continued. So Trump, to me, in 2016, was just going to be another Obama. A beautiful dream. A beautiful dream. Obama was a beautiful dream for a lot of Democrats. It doesn't mean he wasn't a nightmare also. That's part of the shadow of Obama. There was a darkness there for a lot of people. Okay? Definitely Libya as a country was better before Obama, okay? It was. You may not like Gaddafi, but Libya as a country would have been a better situation if Obama had not won in 2008. But Obama was a beautiful dream. He promoted things and ideas that seemed really idyllic and beautiful and amazing, just like the photo shoot for the Fyre Festival. Just like that weekend of Billy McFarland and Ja Rule and the models, a beautiful, beautiful dream. But the reality turns out to be a nightmare sometimes, and that's what happened. And that's the same thing with Make America Great Again and Donald Trump. It's like Donald Trump is a beautiful dream. Some people are starting to wake up to this. It is happening. I think that the powers that be know this. They know that the half-life isn't what it was before, for Americans just saying, wait a minute, we're getting fooled again, you know? Hillary's not in jail yet. That's a kind of inconvenient truth there. But yeah, it's a beautiful dream. Trump is a beautiful, beautiful dream. Okay? He is something that makes people feel better. He is something that comforts them. He is like comfort food. He is. He's Kentucky Fried Chicken for the soul. That's what Trump is. And for a lot of people, that's exactly the thing, the purpose he serves. He is a beautiful dream. Donald Trump, for a lot of Americans, is that. And so, in terms of the second thing, the structural thing, a lot of people believe in the can-do spirit, but a lot of these structural problems, I don't think, have good solutions. I really don't. Or I should say, if they have good solutions, if there are intelligent responses, and that's a term that James Howard Kunstler uses, they are not about magic. But there is so much magic in the can-do spirit of the beautiful dream. So yeah, there is that desire, fundamentally, to ignore the nightmare. That is part of this whole storyline, to ignore what's really going on in the world. There is part of this situation which is about fantasy. And then there's part of the situation which is about hubris, about people believing that anything can be done because we're so amazing. I don't know. It's one of those things I think about sometimes. Like, my situation sucks, and it's possible that I will end up homeless eventually. I'm still working against it. Who knows? I could get a job here pretty soon. I had a good interview last week. We'll see. But the thing is, I could also end up homeless. And if I do, the question you might ask is, well, Dan, did you end up there because you had to be there or because you ended up making choices that led you there? And the answer I would give is yes. Yes, I made poor choices. That is always part of the story. I could have made better choices and I wouldn't be there. But the other part is, did I have to end up there? Is it part of my reality? Is it part of my situation? I think it's part of a lot of people's situation. And I don't think you can simply dismiss people and say, well, you're homeless, therefore you're a scumbag. So I don't know. I think about this whole fire festival thing, and to me it's funny because it is so completely removed from my reality. Like, it might as well be another planet. In fact, that might be the way I want to end this podcast. That to me, this whole beautiful dream of so many people, whether it's Trump or Obama or this fucking fire festival, it might as well be another planet. Like, if I walk the streets and I'm not staring at my smartphone and I don't have earbuds in, I'm on planet Earth. But I can walk on the sidewalks and I can be surrounded by people who have earbuds in and are staring at their screens, and they are on another planet someplace else. Anywho, I think that's enough of this podcast. It's so early in the morning. I can't believe I did this one.